Welcome, everyone. This is the Clinical Science Podcast. I'm Dr. Matthew Panarella. Today, I wanted to talk about the tragedy in Tennessee where two young children were mauled to death by two pit bulls. Read to you just a little bit from the New York Post, which is where I first saw this article. Two children, a five-month-old boy and a two-year-old girl, were mauled to death by two pit bulls that were part of their family. Dogs had been with the parents for about 8 years, and there's a couple of pictures of the children, there's pictures of the dogs, and one of the sentences right under one of the pictures of the dogs, as one of the sentences in the story says, the pit bulls had reportedly never shown signs of violence prior to attack. Well, it's a dog. Any dog can attack, especially pit bulls, which are the number one cause of fatalities to human beings in the United States. This is a terrible tragedy. Those two children obviously didn't deserve to die by those two, by the attacks from those two dogs. The mother intervened, tried to fend off the dogs, but was unable to do it. And if people don't really understand what's going on here, these two animals, these pit bulls are bred to fight. They're strong, they're stocky, they have incredibly powerful jaws. And the way a dog's teeth are set up, dogs are carnivores, their teeth are meant for ripping and tearing. Therefore, when they grab onto something, someone, they can do a tremendous amount of damage. Well, that's not surprising. Dogs can attack at any point, and obviously that's what's happened in this case. Or dogs can bite all the time and give people plenty of warning and ample notice that they're not to be trusted. Bringing animals into your home, I think, warrants a considerable amount of thought and risk analysis, which most people are not really good at. Into risk analysis later on in the podcast. Now I'd like to review with you some data that's published in a website called PubMed, which is available to anyone with an internet connection. PubMed is a database collected by, I believe it's the National Institutes of Health. Yes, NIH, National Library of Medicine. They're the ones curating PubMed, and what they do is they have certain journals that are of high enough quality and that peer review papers put out by researchers or scientists. And this is the highest level that we can achieve here in a civilization at the moment in curating and maintaining papers and accuracy and science. I want to read to you a few, which I will link in the bottom of the podcast. Here's a paper from 1996 called Fatal Dog Attacks from 1989 to 1994 by Sachs, Lockwood, Hornreich, and Satin. I'm not going to read the entire paper. Some of these papers I don't have access to because they're behind a paywall, but I do have access to the abstract, which is an abstract basically is a synopsis of the key facts or findings in a report in a study. So they looked at in 5 years, 109 fatal dog bites. So that's about a little over 20 a year in that 5 year span. 57% of those that died were less than 10 years old. 22% of the attacks revolved an unrestrained dog off the owner's property. 18% involved a restrained dog on an owner's property, and almost 60% involved an unrestrained dog on the owner's property. So you can see a lot of this is happening on homeowners' properties. 11 attacks involved a sleeping infant. 19 dogs involved in fatal attacks had a prior history of aggression. So you can see right off the bat here, we only have 20% basically, or slightly less than 20% of dogs that had a history of aggression. 19 of 20 deaths involved an unneutered dog. Pit bulls were the most commonly reported breed involved in 24 of the deaths, so about a little less than 25%. And then the next most common were Rottweilers and German Shepherds. So you can see we're going to develop a pattern here. Let me go to the next report. This one is called Human Fatalities Resulting from Dog Attacks in the United States. 1979 to 2005 by Langley. So this is a much longer time period. We're talking 25, 26 years. Again, I have the abstract here. Like the last paper, there was an average of about 19 deaths per year. And this is, we're talking in the United States only. Men and children less than 10 years of age had the highest rate of death from dog attacks. Deaths were reported in all 50 states, with Alaska reporting the highest death rate from dog attacks. And let me go to the next one. The final report that I have is titled The Demographics of Dog Bites in the United States. This is by Loader. And again, I have access to the abstract. And we also do have access to the entire article. Let me click on the entire article here. It's a couple of key things. On average, over the time span of this report, which spanned 2005 to 2013, this was in the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System database. Every year, there was on average 337,000 emergency department visits for dog bites. The average age was almost 29 years old, about half male, half female. The dog bites mostly were related on occurred on the upper extremity, meaning the hands and arms, and about 25% were on the head and neck, and then about 20% were on the legs and the feet, and then a small amount on the body. Younger patients had more bites involving the head and neck, while older patients, mostly it was the upper extremities, arms and hands. Most occurred in the summer and on the weekends, and 80% occurred at home. So 80% of the attacks, bites, were happening to people at home by their own animals, basically. To read a report put out by the CDC from 1997. I think this is the last time that the CDC actually put out any specific information regarding dog bite fatalities in the U.S., and it covered 2 years, 1995 to 1996. Just a couple of quick highlights here. From 1979 through 1994, attacks by dogs resulted in the death of 279 people in the United States. A couple of examples. January 1995, a two-year-old boy in South Dakota wandered into a neighbor's yard where he was attacked and killed by two chained Wolf Sherman Shepherd hybrids. In September 1995, a three-week-old girl in Pennsylvania was killed in her crib by the family Chow Chow while the parents slept next door, next room. In March 1996, an 86-year-old woman in Tennessee went outside to check on the weather and was fatally mauled by two Rottweilers owned by a neighbor. Previously, the dogs had attacked a woman about 1 month before. During 1995 to 1996, 25 people died as a result of dog attacks. 23 of the deaths was sufficient information. During 1995-96, Rottweilers were the most commonly reported breed involved in fatal attacks. We have quite a bit of information here to discuss. I just want to bring up one thing at the bottom of the MMWR, which is called the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, which the CDC puts out, tracking disease and death in the United States. So the way this table works is on the left-hand column, they have two categories, pure breeds and crossbreeds. Purebred means it's a dog that is pure to its breed, meaning it's they're going to classify dogs as pit bulls, Rottweilers, German Shepherds, okay? So we're not mixing a Labrador with a German Shepherd here, or a Malamute with a Doberman Pinscher, let's say. And then crossbreeds are dogs that are mixtures of other breeds. So they have two-year increments here. I'm just going to read you the totals. So the number one breed of dog fatalities between 1979 and 1996 were pit bulls with 60. They had killed 60 people. Rottweilers were second with 29. German Shepherds were third with 19. Huskies were fourth with 14. And Malamutes were next with 12. And then there's a few others breeds down below. Now let's talk about the crossbreeds, again, between 1979 and 1996. Wolf hybrids killed 14 people, German Shepherds an additional 11, German Shepherd mixes. Pit Bull mixes killed an additional 10. Huskies killed an additional 6, and Malamutes an additional 3. So let's just do a couple of quick pieces of math here. So Pit Bulls and Pit Bull crosses between 1979 and 1996 killed 70 people. Rottweilers between 1979 and 1996, let's see, 29, and it's a total of 29. German Shepherds killed 19 plus 11, that's 40. Huskies, which we had talked about between, if we add up the purebred and the crossbred, looks like 14 and an additional 6, so that's 20. So you can see these are not insignificant numbers. So let's talk about all this data that we have at our hands now and in our minds. I think we can fairly see that we could be fairly certain to say that dog bites and dog attacks are not uncommon in the United States. Every year there's somewhere between 300 and 500,000 attacks by dogs that are sending people to the emergency room. That doesn't include, obviously, people who are bitten and never seek attention, number one, at an emergency department. Two, they might go to their general practitioner. So I think conservatively, there's probably millions of dog bites a year in the United States. On top of the dog bites, we have dog deaths. And I think we can, again, say that they're not uncommon. Fatalities by dogs are going to average about 20 a year, with pit bulls being the number one breed causing fatalities. The second are going to be Rottweilers, and then third are German Shepherds. So I think we are starting to see a pattern here. I don't think it's surprising, based on the fact that pit bulls are bred to fight. Rottweilers are used as security, and so are German Shepherds. A lot of people are purchasing, either buying these animals or adopting them, obviously for numerous reasons. I can't give every reason that's out there, but a couple of the big ones would be, one, people want to rescue or save an animal that they're developing an emotional attachment to at a shelter. Also, people are purchasing these animals, which I would call for family/home defense, and or they're purchasing or getting these animals, let's say, for a business to scare off, would-be burglars and robbers. So obviously people are coming in frequent contact with these animals. So I don't think in my mind that 20 deaths a year by dogs is an insignificant number. It might sound like not very many compared to 330 million Americans, but when a mauling and a killing of two children by pit bulls, I think it brings home and brings up in our faces and in our minds and in our hearts how devastating these attacks really are and can be and have been. So this tragedy, while not uncommon, I hope that it brings people pause and also brings people pause who are adopting out these types of animals, that they need to really be way more diligent and cautious about where these animals go and what situations they're putting human beings in, because I come from the perspective of human safety first. Animals are important, but they're not more important than human beings, and human life definitely trumps animal life. So this brings me to risk analysis and risk. I think human beings are not the greatest judge of risk and or their abilities to manage risk. I think in general, people underestimate risk and overestimate their abilities to overcome risk, or they're not even thinking about risk, period. This tragedy highlights the minimization of risk, or maybe not considering risk. Even though the dogs had been with the family for 8 years, I think we can see here that pit bulls may not be the most appropriate pet in a home with young children or the elderly or the disabled. And we've also seen here, I've read it to you, that adults can be attacked by these animals, and it is not uncommon. There have been plenty of women that have been walking multiple dogs and pit bulls, and those dogs turn on that person and kill them. So I would say that that risk is at the maximum. People are trying to do the right thing. They're using their heart, but sometimes your heart is going to get you into trouble here, and your emotions will block your judgment. So I think people that are going to get these high-risk breeds, and I'm not calling for the elimination of the breed, but what I am calling for is the people that are selling these animals, that are adopting out these animals, and the people that are purchasing these animals, and the people that are adopting these animals, take pause and really, really consider what is the worst case scenario. I think the worst case scenario, as we've seen, is death. These animals can kill. They can kill children. They can kill men. They can kill women. They can kill the elderly. They can kill the disabled. So they're dangerous to everyone, depending on the situation. And they're unpredictable. And being unpredictable makes it even worse. An animal that's giving you advance notice that it's a problem, at least you know in advance that it's a problem. So for 8 years, unfortunately, these dogs were well-behaved given the situation in the family. And then things changed. And when there's change, systems become much more unpredictable, especially if you've not been through that experience or a very, very similar experience. And therefore, you would have some knowledge about behavioral patterns of animals and the people. And with these two children coming into this family, it's going to change the dynamic between the human beings and the human beings and the animals. And if the animals are, for whatever reason, they're confused, they're frightened, they're scared, children move quickly, children are loud, children might inadvertently be left alone with animals, children might grab an animal and cause it pain, children might challenge, unbeknownst to the children, using children as an example, they might challenge that animal, and then that animal has only two options. It can run away or it can attack. And depending on the situation and the dog, they're either going to run away or they're going to attack. And obviously these fatalities are the result of attacks where animals are either cornered or they're just straight out attacking to eliminate to them whatever the threat is. That means that these dogs felt threatened in some fashion. And I think that's a result of the change in dynamics in the family. So changing dynamics changes the balance of power, and it allows different things to happen. And I think we can see in this case that unfortunately it was a terrible result for the family. So I think people need to assess risk better. I think they need to look at what breed are they getting. Is there lifestyle appropriate for the breed? Do they have the time to handle the animal? What are their vulnerabilities? What are the vulnerabilities of the people and the circumstances that they're bringing this pet into? Do they have young children, infants? Do they have the elderly? Do they have disabled people in their family or in their living circumstance? Are they getting one animal or multiple animals? Although obviously one animal can cause a fatality, I think many of these cases seem to revolve around multiple animals. And then you're also getting into the dynamic of the two animals together, again, and with the family dynamic. And then what are people's real end goals? I think they need to really think about. And also, I think it is difficult to adapt, to change, to think about your changing circumstances. You might take for granted that all the dogs are good, even though they're pit bulls. And you may never have had a difficult interaction with the dogs. The dogs may never have been scared, hurt, injured, or what have you. And now you bring in an additional dynamic where, again, if you go back to what's the worst, if you look at risk and say, what's the worst that can happen here? Well, somebody can be killed is the worst. And I think that's one of the worst things that can happen to a human. Obviously, it's the worst thing that can happen to a human being, but also it is the highest risk level that we can put ourselves under basically voluntarily and not even really realize that there is an animal in your midst, in your household, that can kill you or kill somebody in your family. And obviously a young child would be extremely vulnerable to a very stocky, sturdy dog with a very powerful bite that is designed and bred for fighting. And one other consideration is, I think it's more related to adopting, but it'd also be true if you were purchasing a puppy, is what is the dog's history? And I think a lot of times that a dog being adopted, the history might be sketchy at best. Or if there is a history, you should take it with a grain of salt. Because then that's basically hearsay. The person that actually owned the animal is not generally adopting out the animal from a shelter. The shelter people are getting these animals and they're adopting them out. So I think that you need to be, if you're going to adopt these animals, your level of caution should be much, much higher, and you should be very skilled at handling these animals and these potentially aggressive breeds. So my goal here with this, my main goal, this is my own personal goal, but also the goal of this podcast, is to educate and inform. And I hope that you have found that this podcast has been educational and informational and will get you, if you are in this circumstance, to think about your circumstance, think about the vulnerabilities in your life and your loved ones, because you do not want to experience what those parents in Tennessee experienced and are experiencing right now with the horror of their two children being killed by the dogs that they trusted and loved, I'm sure. And that the children probably had some affinity for and attachment to. So it's a tragedy all around, obviously, for the sad death of the children and the wounding of the mother who tried to intervene, and for the father and for the mother for the loss of their two children. It's a tragedy of unimaginable proportions. And if we can do anything in the future to minimize that happening to anybody else, I would be extremely thankful. So I hope that this has given you some information in which to make some choices in the future. I look forward to seeing you again. A lot of topics I'd like to talk about. And if you have any topics out there that you'd like to talk about, you can send me an email at askdrmatt@proton.me. That's askdrmatt, all lowercase, at proton, proton.me. Thank you and see you soon.